Premier Gordon Campbell's massive infrastructure project announced this week includes plans to expand Highway 1 to 8 lanes between 200th Street in Langley and 1st Avenue in Vancouver, and to twin the Portman Bridge. This freeway expansion is being presented as the only possible solution to congestion on the highway. A new report analyzes the existing traffic patterns at two points on the Trans-Canada, the Portman Bridge, and the Douglas Interchange in Burnaby, and comes to a different conclusion about what needs to be done. Eric Doherty is the author of the report, and he joins me in the studio this morning. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Where is the most significant traffic congestion on Highway 1?
The worst point is actually on the Portman Bridge, but the busiest point is in Burnaby.
So there's a lot of traffic in Burnaby itself?
Yeah, in Burnaby, the traffic flow is 25% higher than on the Portman Bridge. That's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about this freeway, is that much of the traffic on it is going fairly short distances, like from Coquitlam to Burnaby. Also, a lot of traffic from Surrey to Coquitlam.
So is there a bit of a misconception there then that all the traffic comes all the way from Surrey all the way to downtown Vancouver?
That's a huge misconception that what we're dealing, you know, people even think that there's large quantities of traffic coming from Langley all the way to downtown. That's a very small percentage of the overall traffic flow. Largely what we're dealing with is traffic flows from areas that can and should have good public transit to other areas that already have good public transit.
Well, will the plan to twin the Portman Bridge and build more lanes from Langley all the way to East Vancouver, will that help deal with that problem?
No, it'll shift the problem into people's neighborhoods. That's what always happens with these freeway projects. It just increases the flow of traffic. And for a while, what you'll get is you'll get the traffic congestion shifting onto neighborhood streets, like 12th Avenue, like all the streets in Millardville. All of these neighborhood streets are going to be, they're busy streets now. They're just going to be packed. And then the government will move and say, well, we need to expand these roads too. We'll have to knock down your house.
Well, let's look at that dynamic then of increasing traffic and increasing congestion by expanding the roads. Many people believe that building wider roads does relieve traffic congestion. It's an obvious, like, it's sort of like your first straight ahead kind of piece of logic. It's like more lanes, cars spread out in those lanes, less traffic congestion. So obviously at first glance it seems reasonable, but is that not the case as you're suggesting?
In all North American examples, in growing cities, when you build freeways, traffic gets worse. There are a few prairie cities, very wealthy oil cities, that for a few years were able to build freeways so quickly that they could stay ahead of the congestion on the freeways. But that's not talking about what happens on the connecting roads to the freeways. It's not talking about what happens in people's neighborhoods.
Well, explain that dynamic to me. Like, what is the dynamic where if you build wider roads, you actually, in the end, increase congestion? Do you increase congestion on the highway or only in the neighborhoods? I guess I should ask that first.
Both. The congestion is immediate in the neighborhoods on the connecting roads, and then after a time, the traffic builds up. Usually after quite a short period of time, like 2 to 4 years. In a rapidly growing region like Vancouver, you'll discover that the traffic is back to being congested again on the freeway, on the right, actually at the off ramps.
So, what's the dynamic there? Why do you get that increase in congestion?
People make choices. People make choices very quickly whether they're going to get in their car or whether they're going to get on transit. And if you build a new road, people are pretty logical. They will say, "I can get there faster right now." And they will buy a car, and that's a long-term decision. They will also buy a house out in an area that's not served by transit. And they make these choices. The developers get out ahead of that. Even before the highway is built, you'll see that developers will be advertising sprawling subdivisions. That's happened on the Sea to Sky Highway. The traffic is already increasing there before they finish the construction. They haven't actually increased the capacity of the highway significantly yet, but the sprawl is already happening.
Okay, so then the dynamic is that you increase capacity, people look at that and go, okay, there's flow through, I can go there, I can have a house out there. So they fill that capacity and then you're back to the congestion problem.
Exactly, and it happens, that's been very well known for a long time. But what is really surprising to people is how quickly it happens.
Now, you argue for more public transit options for commuters. Where do buses need to run specifically to get some of those cars that are currently on the highway and congesting highway number one? Where do buses need to run to alter that traffic pattern to get those cars off the highway?
The biggest single route is to have an express bus route from Surrey to Coquitlam, from Surrey Center to Coquitlam Center. And that's something that's been proposed by TransLink. It came from the people of the Tri-Cities area, Coquitlam, in their area transit plan. That's what people asked for there. It made it into TransLink's 10-year plan. It's there. It's on the books. TransLink is planning to do it, except for it's not funded.
Okay, so we see where the barrier is there. Now, if someone's currently trying to take transit on that particular route, what's their experience like?
Their experience is, first of all, probably there's no bus in their neighborhood that gets them. That's the first barrier. You can't make any of these things work if there's not bus service into people's communities. So that means a whole number of different bus routes in places like Surrey, particularly the North Surrey growth concentration area. Those areas need good bus service. What happens now is that they'll go to the SkyTrain. They'll take a short trip across the SkyTrain to New Westminster, change SkyTrain cars, go the opposite direction onto the New Millennium Line, and then change bus, and depending on where they're going in Coquitlam, then they may get a direct bus, or there may be two more buses for them to get on and transfer.
So a lot of transfers and a lot of time.
A lot of transfers, a lot of time, a lot of inconvenience.
Do people who are currently using Highway 1 to get into Vancouver want a public transit option?
A lot of them do. There's a very high demand in places like Surrey for improved transit. Let's face it, I drive in the city here, and I drive on the freeway. It's not a pleasant experience. I suspect that it's a very small percentage of the population that really enjoys driving in big city situations anywhere on the planet.
But they're not seeing an alternative.
Yeah, they're not seeing an alternative, and a lot of them don't believe that an alternative is possible.
Has there been any quantification of people's desire to have transit into Vancouver? Any studies done on that?
I'm not aware of really good studies, but that's obviously a study that should have been done well before this announcement was made.
What is important to people when they take the bus? Like, if public transportation is going to be an option, what are people kind of looking for in an efficient bus service? Because, as you say, it's like driving on the freeway isn't a pleasant experience. I'm sure blood pressures rise, considerably. What are people looking for something that would say it's better to take the bus than the car on a commute into from Surrey, for instance?
There's two things that are really key. One is just the basics of the service, of having frequent service, so that if you miss your bus by 1 minute, you're not waiting for 14 more minutes for the bus. Because that obviously adds a huge amount of stress and time to people's commute. That's a massive one. Just having the service being frequent. 8 minute service is where people are really starting to become happy with their bus service. The other really big one is fares. Those are the two, number one and number two. And then it comes to the speed of and reliability of the service. Is the bus getting stuck in traffic? So if you have frequent service and you have bus lanes and the fares are low, your ridership will be good. There's an awful lot of other things that contribute to a good transit experience. You know, clean buses, pleasant staff, rain shelter. But compared to frequency of service, speed, and the fares, it doesn't. Those things don't make a very big difference in the ridership, and neither does switching, say, from bus to rail service. Although there is definitely a comfort improvement generally going from bus to rail, but not as big as many people would think it would be.
Do we have concrete examples in the Lower Mainland where bus service has significantly cut traffic use?
Yeah, I think the University of British Columbia is probably the best example. Since the introduction of UPass, the traffic is down 18%. And that's just with bus service.
Yeah.
There's no transit priority measures, no significant transit priority measures. It's just a matter of making the service more frequent and reducing the fares.
Well, I know, anybody who has to kind of go along that route is like a huge fan of the B line. And the question is, when you get to the end of the B line, and you're trying to go home, how's the connection there?
Well, that's actually the problem with the B line is that it works. I actually ride to UBC from the very end, from the Broadway end to the UBC end. It works okay for me. It's the people in the middle who sometimes wait for four buses because it's overcrowded and they just can't get on, and they stand there in the rain for three or four buses with just sardines going past them.
Now, the pictures of the new Portman Bridge in the newspapers this week had bike lanes, light rail, cars flowing, looked like transportation heaven. Is light rail, as these pictures suggest, a good solution for Highway 1?
Well, I don't think it's really seriously being proposed by the government. If you look at the picture of what they're proposing on the front page of the report, it was on the front page of The Sun, I believe, what they're showing is a new six-lane bridge. That's exactly what they said with the Alex Fraser Bridge. We're going to have four lanes for traffic and two for transit. And within a few months, there were six lanes for traffic. It's very obvious what the provincial government is up to here. They're planning on making an 11-lane freeway between Surrey, to make it 10 or 11 lanes across
right.
the Fraser.
So the
rapid transit, there's no money for that. There's no serious plans for that. It's not even really a question.
So it's that classic sort of development technique of saying there will be all these extras and user-friendly and environmentally sound options included, and then they're the first thing to go.
Exactly. And in this case, it also doesn't make very much sense because there are two rail alternatives that make a lot of sense. The first one is the SkyTrain line that already exists. It's only being used to one-third of its capacity just because there aren't enough SkyTrain cars. And of course, that's just a matter of money. The other one is that the New Westminster Rail Bridge is the biggest rail bottleneck in the province. Is right at New Westminster. That's 104 years old. That's what's stopping the possibility of having regional rail service to places like to Surrey, to Calgary, to making this and out to the valley. As far as Hope and all the destinations in between, the kind of rail service we used to have.
Right. Now, what would be the cost of these transit improvements if we were to improve bus service through the highway system?
Well, what I've proposed is a package of measures priced out at $300 to $500 million. And that's less than a third of what the government's optimistic forecast is.
Your report says that we're at a transportation crossroads in the Lower Mainland. What's at stake in the next few years?
The whole direction of our region, our city. We could be heading towards like a Los Angeles-style sprawl, and with more and more freeways, more and more traffic, and a declining transit system. On the other hand, we could have a real transit renaissance here. We're well placed to become or the leader in Canada and the United States as far as sustainable transportation goes.
And what will it take to get there?
It'll take a lot of people getting out on the street. And that's what it took to stop the freeway coming in to downtown Vancouver in the 1960s and 70s. It didn't happen because of a few politicians saying that, oh, we don't want this. It happened because thousands and thousands of people decided that they were going to protect their neighborhoods.
Eric, thanks for joining me this morning. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Eric Doherty, and he's the author of a new report, Transport for a Sustainable Region. And you can find the full report on the SPEC website, and that's at spec.bc.ca, and SPEC is S-P-E-C,